Thank you, Elon. Elon made it fast so that the come in first and third in the stomach.
Wow.
Yeah.
Similar idioms to the sun or something too. That would be
really interesting. That's that part, right?
Yeah, it's a very good expression. That's literally it. You got each one, and that's a good one. And so add a little daughter from the monster to the water daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember studying that.
That's not one of
those. Yeah, it's this
the
pupil can work in the eye, the daughter of the eye. In other words, it's dependent upon the rest of the eye, and it's associated with it. You know, it doesn't have any adhesion or part of the eye. So it doesn't have any. But it is a tree, you know, I like the daughter. Of course, I think daughter was the very common medium. I think she wonders. Those images are, you know, we may be reading too much into it, but still, you know, it's such a curious expression. You wonder how they ever came up with such a thing. And sometimes we'll pick up on those curious expressions because you've got the mixture of nice and feminine images. And especially since he's talking about church, he's talking about his people. It's very, very interesting. What's that bad at the Psalms? Did it ever occur in Song of Solomon? That's one of the strangest idioms that I've ever seen in here. The one where it talks about the apple of the eye. The Hebrew literally has the little man, the daughter of the eye. That's a strange.
The little man,
the daughter of the eye. Well, daughter is a kind of a daughter of something is something that's dependent on something. That's kind of another Hebrew idiom. You know, if daughter is supposed to be, a dependent person,
makes
it matter more. It's independent.
Yeah.
That's
right. Some of that, my daughter. You got the broken eyeball.
No, that didn't change the grade on there. There was a big gap in the curve there. Well, no, you're using a biblical idiom here.
The apple of my eye.
Oh, I wonder where the apple came from.
I know.
The Hebrew idiom is strange.
Yeah,
we just have the
stone of the eye in Swedish? Something like that. Or that is used for something that we do. It is the eye really wants to look on something.
What is it in German?
Must have been somebody in Washington State came up with that.
I meant it was a common expression back in the day.
yeah, it could be.
Because you just, you know, it could be any number of wild connections. You have to know the historical setting. And,
there's a lot of expression.
You need apples with the shiny apples.
Yeah, you see reflection in them or something. See your eyes in them.
They didn't have apples back then. Sure, isn't that what eBay is?
Oh, yeah.
King
James people.
Oh, yeah.
The name of the apple.
Yeah, see, that would be the King James, because the Hebrew expression is that little man's daughter. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. That's one of the most unusual ones.
How would they have ever decided? What is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's an apple. That's an apple. It doesn't
really translate
to that.
You better be careful of the theology, though. And you better get little men and daughters in your eye. Okay. We want to do some review for the test coming up on Friday, but I think we'll just finish up this lesson 25 first, and then we'll do a review. And if we don't get that far today, that's fine. We'll take all day tomorrow and the next day for a review of those four chapters. But we're in chapter 25, and we have talked about the imperative, first of all. We got through that part. And basically, it's just a matter of lopping off the prefix, but you have a few things to watch for on some types of verbs. We just saw all the examples there. And then adding suffixes, the second-person suffixes, basically. The imperatives are basically a second-person type of form. You're making that request or command. So you're addressing someone, and so that's all very appropriate. Then we saw how to negate a command either with all or null plus the imperfect, depending on whether it's a specific command or whether it's a specific prohibition, excuse me, or whether it's more of a general thing. We talked about the particle na, that's one that he says not to translate, but there's a feeling to it that, you know, it'd be nice to try to get expression for it. Then section 103, verbs 1 guttural, imperfect and imperative. Now we begin to look at all the complications in imperfect. We already looked at pop-out type imperfects, but here we have some more complications, because now we've got a guttural in the first position, and the essential problem is, like we delineated at least to start with last time, is that you're dealing with a situation in which a guttural can't take schwa, and it's going to be normally in a position to take schwa in most of these prefixes of the imperfect. So that's going to require it taking something else, a reduced vowel. And that would be all right, except for the fact that there's two kinds of things that they can do. There's two categories of verbs here. Some of them take pop-ox, and some of them take skull. And so you've got avav, and the imperfect is ya'avod. Ya'avod is the colon type imperfect as far as the last vowel is concerned. But it takes a reduced pasach and then a full pasach in the first syllable there instead of the hirik. So there's your peculiarity. Now the imperative is not too bad. You just chop off the ya, you get avod. So it's the same kind of situation as before. Now the second category is chazak, and that one becomes yechazak. Now notice it's a pasach type imperfect. In other words, the last vowel is a pasach. We have two categories, the fulms and the pasach type. But now the prefixal element is segol. And you get a kata segol on the guttural. And then the imperative goes back to chazak, goes back to a pasach on that. So there's where our problems lie. And so some summarization comments here. Verbs with colon imperfects have papak in the prefixal element, except in first person singular. You can see that down there. That gets close to goal. Now those with papak imperfects have to goal. Now the question is, which ones are colon imperfect and which ones are papak imperfect? They kind of have to know that, to know whether it's you know, gets papak or to goal in the first part. And so you might as well just learn each one. I mean, you're going to have to know the verb to know whether it's one or the other anyway. So that's kind of where we're at. If it's a one guttural, then it also happens to be either a two or a three guttural. Then you're going to be pretty sure you're going to get the Sigol type, because it'll be a pop-up type imperfect instead of that. But there's some pop-up imperfects. Remember, some of the verbs that seems very, very regular in every other respect had a pop-up imperfect. So you can't really always predict it.
The inverting in each of these main types has developed a secondary vowel after or under the root consonant. That secondary vowel is basically because of the guttural cystic schwa, so you gotta reduce papa. I mean, or reduce papa, or reduce the goal. In inflection, the rule of schwa must apply. Thus, the expected ya'amdu becomes, ya'amdu becomes ya'amdu with full papa. So, a real change of pronunciation. Anybody have a philosophical reason for that? Anybody follow what's happening here? Anybody follow what's happening? Okay. Yeah, it's rule of schwa and the second syllable down, the second and third syllable. You see, according to following the paradigm out, you would have gotten ya'amdu with a chatas pasak and a schwa following. But there again, since the chatas pasak is technically a schwa, now again you'd have two schwas in a row. So that chatas pasak has the length of two full pasak. It's a full vowel for the short vowel there. And so you get ya'amdu with full pasak. And then he just made a note retention of the soft bait D sound, the vowels of nogatagesh. The reason for noting that is that very often when you close a syllable and a bagadkapa begins in the syllable, it will get the hard form. But this is just unusual as that's doing here.
Like
kind of
curious the two shuras and the two shuras didn't bother us before, did they? We run regular strong perfect.
Well, no, they didn't, but you see you didn't have there's kind of a different thing happening there. It's not quite the same thing because you've got another, how do I say this? What was that?
Yiktavu,
yeah. It would be a somewhat analogous situation. I think the main thing is just the fact that you have a guttural here and you can't really have the same kind of close. Now there is going to be a situation where it's analogous to that coming up. Some of them don't do this. They go to do that. So that's the top of the next page. But I think the main problem is that being a guttural, it's hard for them. They do it in some of these verb forms, you know, like putting a schwa even on an ayin and so forth, and some of those verb forms are perfect. But they don't generally like to do that. They like to think of that first syllable being closed and then starting the next one. So you get a silent schwa for the first one and a vocal for the second one. But since you've got a vocal automatically because it's guttural, that's where you kind of run into a problem now, because now you get two vocals in a row, and that's definitely what they don't like. Don't mind so much having a silent and then a vocal, you know. That's why I said, if you ever see two schwas in a row in the middle of a word like that, the first one's silent, the second one's vocal. But here, to have a rigid pasak is vocal automatically, and the next one wants to be vocal, and so now you've got your problem. So in effect, what they do is like the first one and make the next one silent. So they kind of they fly down that closed syllable, you know.
Tricky.
Yeah, it is. It is a tricky thing. That's why we need to call attention to it. Because like you say, it really was a problem with the ordinary schwa. But it's that guttural that's messing everything up. So you look at the paradigm, and here's another thing to take note of. If you mark your book or whatever, you might want to just take note of that. First person singular form for Ahmad, it goes back to Segol. So let's read down the paradigm here. You've got Ya'amod, Ta'amod, Ta'amod, Ta'amdi, and then E'amod. Instead of A'amod, it's E'amod. So that's the one to watch. So it's Papa Tax gets Segol in that particular form. And it's Papa to the word else. Ya'amdu, Ta'amod, Na, Ta'amdu, Ta'amodna and Na'amod. But it's basically a phoneme type imperfect, other than the peculiar complication of the first two syllables. Then the Segol types, they're Segols all the way through the form. So.
And it looks like that the first person one spills over to the gold kind of.
Yeah, it kind of does. It kind of just leaks over to the other type there, you know. I don't know. Can't give you any logic for the reason for it. I mean, there's no reason why an olive couldn't take a pot off just like, you know, something else. But that's just what happens. That's so peculiar anyway.
That dark point on your eye in there is really very, very...
Yeah, if you change the olive point in the eye, and then, you know, because of all those other changes that occurred, it seems to slop over to the olive. So it doesn't matter what way you think of it, but make sure you get it right. Okay. Then, if you look at Chazak, that's once you see the first peculiarity, then everything's okay. Papak type is perfect, so the last syllable will be Papak. When you get to the gold, the first syllable goes all the way across the board. So it's kind of easy to memorize the pattern. I mean, you to go on concept to go. I guess the only thing that you have to watch though is that you don't get the concept to go when you get the cold syllable. You know, that rule of Shawat where you get the those forms, it's just two places here. Tech has key and tech has ku. Yek has ku. Tech has key and yek has ku. Is where you're going to get that form. Let's see, is there any other place where you get the go? Yes, right. Second school, right. There's three forms all together. You get so many dots carried, your eye can't hardly focus anymore. A lot of dots when you start getting these double scrolls. We need to see some forms on the next stage here. Okay. So, just watch for that. And it's pop-up type, and they're perfect all the way through, except for there for the schwa. So, again, the rule of schwa applies the same way here. You get two folds to gold from those three forms, where you might have expected. Just go ahead and stay with the goal. Then it says the inflection of the imperative offers no special problems. In other words, no more problems than what you already have. Avod becomes Ivdi, Ivdu, and Avodna. So, I mean, we've already looked at what happens to some of these other ones, so that's not really all that significantly new. I suppose the main thing there is just the fact that you get the Chesed Patak, you know. Other than that, it's just pretty much like Kadol. And then Chazak, same thing. Chizki, Chizku, and Chazak. Chazak, same analogy, just with the Patak type. So, I guess there's really no special problems there to worry about. Okay, then there are several verbs where no secondary vowel is present. The kind of thing I was talking with that question done for about that. The inflection, except for the vowel of the preformative, follows the regular pattern of yikto. So you do get a different vowel in the preformative, but you don't get the chatef, the reduced vowel. And this is only with certain verbs. That's certainly by no means all verbs, but there are some that are this way. And kashav is one of them. And so you get yak shov, and you go ahead and put a shawa on the chet there. Normally a chet can't take shawa, but it's just indicating a cold syllable, and I guess they figure it, you know, to make the sound. I don't know if any with ayin do this or not, but we did see a similar thing with the perfects on some of those forms with three guttural, where they went ahead and put a shawa on just to close the syllable. Or the T or whatever ending was on it. So they apparently will do this on occasion. And how and why this is the case, you know, who knows? It just may have gotten lax on a few of them or something and went ahead and did it. I don't know. But with a chet, it's kind of easier to pronounce that. It's got almost a consonant sound. So yaksho is not too hard to do. It's not much harder than it with a kaf there. Okay. And yakshavu. There's the form that I was mentioning to Doug. There you get a closed syllable, and then you get another shawa, and that's a vocal shawa. There's no problem in this one. And tech dar, another one there. You will honor the verb to honor. Tech dar. There's just a hey. Tech dar. And there's a hey with a shawa. It's kind of strange. Okay. And then the verb kata. Question?
What is the preformative?
Preformative vowel? Well, the vowel of the preformative, that's the vowel of the prefix. And like your ya, you know, the yod there, See, normally, what was your normal pattern for imperfect? What was the vowel in the preformative for kata, for example, in imperfect? Well, no, that's on the main stem, on the prefix. Yeah, here. Yeah. So in other words, you might have expected yit to show up here if it was following the normal pattern, but the presence of the guttural is represented by the fact that the preformative vowel has changed from yod to kata.
Right, the one in the prefix.
Right, the one in the prefix.
Which you'd expect would be a high-tech
kata, so here, a kata. Yeah, in effect, that's kind of what, you know, kind of what's happening. Yeah.
It's almost resultant.
Yeah, I guess try to find some reason for it. So, you know, you would have expected kata pasak on the thing, and then you get the pasak in the front, but not, but then you lose like kata pasak you expected on the shawak. So, it might help, I guess. I don't know. But see, again, you still don't know whether it's going to be a segol or a pasak in that preformative. This is kashab got pasak, but adar's got segol. That's dar. So, again, you're still back to ground zero. That's why they're going to be getting the regular imperfects, and these one guttural and so forth in the vocabulary. So they'll just give you the imperfect form, and that'll what it does. Now the verb ta-ta, we're going to combine things. It's both one guttural and three olive. So you combine both peculiarities, and it results in a couple of interesting forms at least. You get three segols in a row, you don't see that very often. But remember, the problem with the three olive was that you had a quiescent vowel, and the pasak lengthened to tamas in most of the forms, except in those second person and third person feminine plural forms, where you got that tagol. Remember what matza was, you know, what word did they give it? I think it was matza. How long ago did we have that? It was a long time. It couldn't be too long.
Page 104.
Three off, yeah. Page 104. Okay, it's kara. Okay, that's why I didn't sound like that. Yeah. So there was tikrena. You got those from tikrena. You got a tagol in that vowel instead of a papak or something or kalin. And so when you do that now with these, it also has to take tagol from the prefix and so forth because of that guttural. Then you get three tagols in a row. So it's tekatena. And so you get three segols in a row. It's kind of interesting. Not full, but the middle one's a kappa segol, but nevertheless. So you just combine those two features and come up with this. So you get segols in the prefixes and comets in the stem vowel, except in those places mentioned, where it's either schwa or segol.
Does it ever end up with kappa on the prefix?
On the prefix? Not this verb, but some others conceivably could. I don't know if there are others in the category. But in other words, if another verb was one, was both one guttural and three olive, the three olive part's pretty fixed, but the one guttural part will depend on the word. So I can't say that there are others, but there shouldn't be a reason why not. Okay. If they have a verb that's in that category now. Okay. Well, we got another section on segol. As if you had enough of these irregularities, get a few more here. Now the question is, what do you do with a segol that's also got a guttural in it? And so we're going to take three categories, guttural in first position, guttural in second position, guttural in third position, and the peculiarities thereof. And again, this is kind of the information that you're not going to be well served by spending all of your time trying to memorize this permanently. You know, I mean, for preparing for a particular specific test on it, of course, it's good, but you don't spend all the rest of your life just studying these unusual features. That's what this appendix is there for in the back, to help you when you're in some of these. But for a test, you kind of need to know what's happening. We lay some emphasis on it for a while, but later on, it's best just to look them up. So the guttural in the first position, the only type, the safer type of effect is the Theri Segol type, has peculiarities because of this. The characteristic vowel is Theri instead of Hiric. So when you go to your, it's Segol instead of Hiric, the characteristic vowel, when you go to the suffixes and the constructs and so forth, what he's getting at. So it starts out Aether, and the construct is Aether. That doesn't change. But then your suffix with the singular suffixes becomes Ethri. You get to go Ethri, Ethrika, Ethrikem, etc. In the plural, plurals of the cycles are basically, you know, Shua, Pathak, Shua, Kamat. So this is Kata, Pathak, the guttural. So that's nothing unusual, Adarim. But the construct would not be necessarily predictable. Ezrei, get that the goal again. And then the plural forms with the suffixes, Adarai, that's pretty much straightforward. That's just taking it from the plural form. Adarim, and you just take the Imwap and put I on. There's no real problem there. The only conceivable problem would be with the heavy suffixes, and he doesn't list any here with this, so I don't know if this particular noun maybe just never occurs that way. Some of the others will. But that's where you get that double reduction, you know, and conceivably it would probably, you know, I mean, what you would predict is that we go back to that Seagull pattern again. But it doesn't attest it here, so maybe it doesn't have that form. What was that?
It goes back to the Seagull
Does it? He does give the form of the back there, huh? Yeah. Funny he didn't put it here, because that's part of what he's trying to show. Maybe the type that's just got lazy or something. Okay, but it does go back to, is what is it, Ed Ray Tam?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. That's what you would expect. Okay, then the guttural in the second position, like Na'ar, construct forms Na'ar doesn't change, but then you get Na'ari, and you get a Kata Pathak on the second syllable there in the guttural where you would have gotten a Shua before. So I guess that's predictable pretty much. But then look at the next form beneath that. Na'arka. Okay. What's happened there? Why is the Pathak a full Pathak instead of Kata?
Roshua.
Yeah, right. Roshua again. Again, it's the exact same situation as what we saw over here on the other page dealing with a verb. This time dealing with a noun. So again, in effect, you would have gotten two shuas in a row, so you might be the first one. Okay, and Na'ar Kim, same situation there. Then, with the plural, Na'arim, that's pretty standard. Na'are, you get the double reduction. Well, you know, you just get one. You reduce the comments to Chatzet Pathak, and then Rula Shua makes the first one of both Pathak. So that's pretty straightforward. And then the plurals, Ne'arai, that's just formed on the absolute plural stem with a plural suffix. But then when you get the double reduction again with your long, heavy suffix with the two syllable suffix with the stress of the last, then you get your Ne'arai stem again, the same stem that you had in your construct. So I guess that's pretty regular. I mean, it's the kind of thing we've seen. No plural attention on this. Well, no, I guess there isn't that one, but the next one down here. To'ar. So you get a ho in the first syllable. And construct to'ar, the suffixes with the singular are interesting. You get to'ori, and to'ori, and then this next one can be... Well, I guess you'd call it a ta'ari. It's kind of hard to know whether you're going from a rule of Shua twice or what. This is one where kind of the system gets a little ambiguous. So you could consider that ta'ari, ta'ori, or to'ori. And for the next one down here, I get the same situation there. It's probably to'or ka, because you see you've got the second one has got a Shua following it, so it's going to be a closed syllable. There's no methane on it. So that would have to be Kamaskatu. And then the first one, see, if you've got a string of rule of Shua's going here, the first one's going to be a Kamaskatu also.
Wait, third there.
Yeah, you got to read the third vowel point before you figure out what you got. So I'm sure that the intention is that these all be Kamaskatus. But it's really not obvious.
Actually, in that case, you really have to go and look at the ending, because you have to see that you've got a phenomenal ending.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can tell that that's a rule of
right. Know anything at all. Like
now you really have to know. You have to look at the word from beginning to end.
So we have to read the word from left to right and then read it from right to left.
Just about. Just about. Fortunately, there aren't very many of these, but when you run into them, almost inevitably you try to put, you know, it's one thing when you're looking across the page and you see to-ar there, you kind of suspect you're going to deal with some old sounds. But if you see this thing all by itself in a text, then you're going to be probably stumbled by it. Most likely you'll miss the first text through. And if you catch it, it'll only be because you happen to see that there was a closed syllable, a shawa column, and sounds there that rang strange to you, no message there, and so forth, and you kind of read it back and say, oh, I now remember what this is. Okay, that's probably what's going to happen. All right, then the C here, guttural in the third root position, that poses less of a problem. Zara, for example, the construct Zara again, and then we get Zari, and it's just a matter of knowing what that vowel is. There's no way to really predict it. But then Zar Acha, again, because you couldn't put a Shua on the Ayin, you got Katapata. Zar Achem, same situation. Zeraim, no problem there. And the construct plural, Zar A, no real problem there. Except just remembering that it's Pata. And that's just something you have to learn for the word, as we've seen before. Then Zari, there's no problem with plurals, and then Zar-A, Kim, same situation, you go to the construct stem, basically. Okay, and Zevach, same situation, I think it's just directly analogous here. No real difference there, could be better. Okay, well, the only difference is that it's a hirik, the stem vowel now. A hirik instead of Vatak stem vowel now. But like I say, there's no way to really predict those. And then at the top of the next page, you get one with, again, with the whole type. Orach. Now you've got a one aleph, and I don't want to say one aleph because it's a verb pattern, but you've got a guttural in the first position, a guttural in the last position. In the middle, it's not all that strong either, but the resh. So, you can't take dagesh anyway, although it doesn't really enter into a problem here. So, this one gets Tams Katus, so it's Orchi. Or kaka, so you get the kaf and papa there because you can't take the shua there. So you get both complications in this one. And or kakam, etc. So those are pretty easy to see. They're kamas katus, I guess. Probably not going to get tripped up on those. It's easy. Okay. Although, in that plural form, I should note that second one is a regular kamas. The orakos, for example, there, the plural, absolute plural. The first one's kamas katu, but the other is kapit. But the second one is just an ordinary kamas. Remember, your pattern is shawa kamas. Mm-hmm. And this one, because it started with a colon, gets the kamas katu reduction. So that's orakos. But then it's orakos for the absolute, for the construct plural. And orakosai, and remember, the old type plural gets a construct type of reduction for all of their forms because you're adding a suffix onto the old, so you're in fact adding two suffixes, you're going to try to get as much reduction as you can. So it's orkosai, orkosekam, etc. There's no difference in the stem of those because you've already shortened it as far as you can. That's just a little review of chapter 20 of all. Yeah, that would make things more predictable at least. Neither all those are all eens, just because of that. Yeah. Okay, vocabulary, lesson 25. The zara, meaning stress zara, meaning stress or trouble, and peculiarity in the construct, you don't get the reduction in the first vowel, so it's just zara, zara in the construct. Giveret means mistress or lady, with suffix givreti. Then no plural attested to that. Either flock or herd, saw that as an example in paradigm. Zera meaning seed or offspring or progeny or descendants, quite a range. But of course, the word for seed is in Hebrew and Greek and in English. You have this, it's kind of a singular plural type word.
And there's some plays on that made, you know, in the New Testament, you know, it said not a seed many, but a seed singular and so forth. But the word's really the same for plural or singular. And so it's a purposeful play on words there. But I mean, seed, offspring, meat, a singular one, or just general descendants. Verbs, yare, meaning to be afraid, and you can use that with min, afraid of something, or misne, with a simple object construction. So there you have more of just a, in other words, you can just use to, you know, in English, you might say, if you just use a direct object and don't use min or misne, you get more of something like, he feared this or feared that. But to be afraid of something, they'll use the same idiom we do. So they apparently use this word just exactly like we do, either with something from. Now, this mitzne would be from the face of, kind of that idea, afraid of the face of something. And that kind of makes sense, too, you know, fearing the man's face and anger and displeasure. That's what we do. Okay, barak, to flee. And the imperfect there, yivrak, it's a papak type because of the three guttural. We've got shav, meaning to return, or come, go or come back, either go back or come back, the idea of returning. And we'll see some more on that later on. He's not giving you the imperfect on that note yet, because it's one of these hollow verbs, and it'll have a wow in there, actually. So you shuv, so forth, for the imperative for this is shuv, or shuvi, you know, if you're talking to someone in singular. And the Christian prophecy, return, O daughter to the Lord, something like that. Okay, hara, to conceive or become pregnant. And some miscellaneous words here. A mizeth means from what place, from where? A mizeth. And it can be used adjectively also. A mizeth year, from what city? Then we've got ten, meaning lest, or so that not, followed by the imperfect. That's kind of an interesting construction, too. Lest, you know, you see this used oftentimes in admonitions and so forth. Don't do this, lest you should fall. It's almost got a subjective idea, and we'll be looking at it again when we get to certain types of clause relationships. But just suffice it to say that it's a conjunction that's used meaning lest, or so that not, and it's followed by the imperfect. And, usually used in the context of admonition or something of that nature. Kayom means today or this day. And na, particle that we looked at earlier here, used after imperatives with cohortative injustice. Well, we haven't had cohortative injustice yet. We'll get that in the next chapter. But you'll see na used there also. So far, we've only seen it after imperatives.
We had
Hayom.
Yes, we had
Hayom, and now we've got Kayom. Both meaning today. Okay. And Kayom is probably coming from K, you know, as or like, as they.
You think would have a slightly different meaning?
Well, that's a good question. To have two different words, you would think that there's a slightly different kind of meaning.
Like.
Mm-hmm. The only way you could test it is to examine context and see if there's, you know, a consistent pattern. And I agree with them, tell me whether there is or not. Okay, well, we've got them. Let's see. We could go ahead and do A and B here, I suppose. Oh, yeah, we'll probably better pass it over here. I'm going to get a lot of their stuff in here. They got way late someplace from us. They're probably out having a argument, a theological argument.
I think it's carpooling.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Let's go ahead and take A and B here, so I don't think the review is going to be any problem. Didn't speak up today, and then don't, let's see. I want to assign the rest of this. Yeah,
first thing
I
said.
Push it off that far. I think what we better do, since it's relatively short. Well, let's just kind of make it one of those things where Yeah, after review, if we have time, we'll go over it. So let's just make it for, I'm sure to all day tomorrow will be taken by review, so let's make it for Thursday, tentatively for Thursday. But don't sacrifice your study time for the test to do this. You know, if you can't get it done, we'll just kind of go through it. We'll kind of take it, play it by ear and see what happens.
Thursday.
For CD and E, A and B, we'll do the class today. So CD and E tentatively for Thursday. Sitting on the UR. Okay. First part, translate. Just read the Hebrew and translate. We'll start with Doug over there. Number one, or eight. Okay, it'll just be Deer Shoe. Deer Shoe at the Yala. Okay. From Darash, you need to seek.
Yeah.
And it's one of the forms we just looked at. But we didn't really look at it today.
I'm not sure what it is.
Oh. That's just the object marker.
Okay.
Remember, Yahweh is definite, though.
Seek Yahweh.
Yeah, seek Yahweh. Right. Seek Yahweh. And it's addressing the plural group, you know. Seek ye the Lord, I suppose you could say. Seek ye Yahweh. Okay, number two, Daniel.
Kevot na es ha'am lefani.
Okay.
Lefanai.
Yeah, lefanai.
Please gather people before my face.
Yes, that'd be a good literal. Please gather the people before my face or before me. I pray the people before me. Please gather, please, the people before me.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Number three, five.
Let's do S. Ave, Kaya Bay Camp.
Okay.
They will capture the city again.
Okay, it's not they will, though. It's an imperative.
Oh, okay. Capture
the cities of your enemies. Right. Capture the cities of your enemies. Military commanders, you know, telling his troops to do it. Okay, number four, question.
Command.
Right, it's imperative. So imperative will either be a command, or sometimes commands are milder than others. You know, I have to look at the context. Sometimes it's a real polite command, which we might call a request. See, a request is really a very polite command. You're telling somebody to do something, but it's not with an authoritative demand, but it's still going to use the imperative forms. See, when you pray and was that?
Polite imperative.
Yeah, more of a polite imperative expression. That's oftentimes what the na helps do too, is make polite-ize it, you know. See, there's no na on this one, number three here, because it's more like a military commander, you know. He's not saying please, he's just saying do it, you know. But if you're talking up to somebody, or if you're being hospitable or charitable or, you know, condescending or something like that, you'll use the na more often. Okay. Number four, Eric. Bury them there. Right. Bury them there. Okay. And number five, Bob.
Rick V.
Okay.
I rode towards him on your horse.
Okay. Again, it's not I rode, though. It's an imperative form. This is going to take a while to get used to.
Yeah. Oh, you ride.
Right. Yeah, you ride, right, or just ride. You're talking to a woman,
yeah,
you know, feminine singular. So ride toward him upon your horse. Ride toward him upon your horse. Okay. Number six, John.
I'll take it to Berkey.
Well, just for me. Berkey,
I'm thinking.
Okay.
This is Berkey. Esau.
Okay.
Don't be Esau. Esau. Don't cut the covenant with them.
Right. Don't cut the covenant with them, literally. Yeah. Or don't make a covenant with them. And you're addressing masculine plural group. Okay. And notice we've got the negation. And I'm all here because it seems to be more of an urgent, specific command. You know, there's a covenant, you know, it's like these guys are, you know, you can just see the scene, you know, they're about ready to enter into a covenant, and somebody runs in and says, don't do it, you know, they're deceiving you, you know. Don't sign that salt-to agreement. Okay? There's an urgency. Yeah, speak now for everyone your teeth. Yeah. Okay. You could almost apply that to a wedding, too, as well. Covenant there. All right. Number 7, then. So.
Oh, it's Azul. Yeah. Do not abandon your priests.
Right. Do not abandon your priests. Good. Do not abandon your priests. Okay. Number 8. Peter.
It. Hebrew. Es hasadet ad haskeren.
Okay.
I can't remember.
It means to cross or to traverse or beat the land or something like that. Cross.
Okay. Okay. Cross the field. Upon the vineyard?
Well, I would be more of a far as or until as you reach. Cross the field to the vineyard or until you get to the vineyard. In other words, cross the field until you get to the point. Yeah. Cross the field unto the vineyard, maybe when you get to the vineyard. Okay, number 9. That's it out again.
Raj, now. Kayon es Devar Yahweh.
Okay. Seek this day the word of Yahweh. Seek, I pray, or seek, please, or, you know, this life form here, the word of Yahweh. Okay, you had the first one you had to seek the Lord, now you got to seek the word of the Lord. Okay. Number 10. Daniel?
Lo ta'aferu es mitzvot Yahweh.
Okay.
Don't transgress the commandments of Yahweh.
Right. Don't transgress the commandments of Yahweh. What sense would you see in this command, this prohibition, with lo here as negation?
You shall not.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to translate it, but that's the idea. You shall not do this.
It wants to be permanent.
Right, it's a permanent injunction. It's something that's not good. It's not just a temporary command about a specific situation, but it's an all-encompassing thing. So there's a feeling you get when you see lo and all. But it's not always easy to translate to English, and I wouldn't always worry about it except just to try to make a test or something, try to make a note of it somehow. If it doesn't lend itself to an easy translation, that way you might make a note that this is a short term or long term command or something like that. Okay, then number.
Is that imperative there?
Well, it's actually an imperfect form.
Yeah.
Remember though that when it's a negation, the negation of the imperative is the imperfect, you can go back to the imperfect on. So you get the prefix back on. That's just your regular imperfect form here. Well, it's just your regular, irregular, first one guttural imperfect form. Okay. See, that's one of these one guttural ones. Just the irregularities in a different place. Okay. Number 11, Pride.
The Amati Shum.
Okay.
Don't stand there.
Don't stand there, right. Don't stand there. That's more of a short term command of the author. And there again, that's the perfect form of a one guttural. So you got those pop-tocks there. Okay, number 12.
Right. Shut up.
Yeah.
A poem. Okay.
Send
the Shiyat to me.
Right. Send the 7 and 4 also, you're addressing these women here, the Shiyat to me, or the female donkey, whatever they do. Okay. Then part B, give the Hebrew for the following oral aid. Number one, where is your sister? Give it that thought.
Echo, Akko,
okay, Akko Sakat. Well, let's see, that's Fendi, yeah, that's right. You just had a plural. It doesn't really have to stay here. Yeah, okay. So, yes, either Akko Kem or Akko Sakat or Akko Bake, you know, or Akko Sakem. You got four possibilities there because you are, they didn't designate which it is. You could be talking to several brothers and sisters, you know, in a group, they were your sisters, for sure. So any of those could find it. You could either have Aye or Apo for the beginning with. Yeah, Apo. Okay. It's kind of meant to get, you know, mix them up for a change. We started off, everything was Aye to start with. Okay, number two, do not sin against the Lord. It should be a fun one. The against, just use the preposition lama.
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
And these sins, so there's no stated person you're commanding, is it understood to be you? Like in English, when Spanish is saying, you do not sin against.
Yes, you understand that, yeah, because this is functionally an imperative, even though it's technically an imperfect form, but it's a second person form, and so you kind of supply the you. In other words, you're saying something to somebody. So in this case, now again, you know, you might have chosen, depending on what, do not sin against the Lord, whether you're talking to the singular, we haven't choose singular here, but you could have chosen, well, let's see. Well, you could have chosen either the, you could have chosen the feminine form, so you could have had tekhet t, or you could have, feminine singular, or you could have chosen the plural. Yeah, that's the most logical one, you know. I mean, when you're in doubt, it's like the first time you think you're probably the one to use. But, you know, if you want to be real fun, you could choose the feminine plural, you know. That's that them, you know. So, if you're telling a group of women not to sin, then it would be like if you're telling a group of men or a mixed multitude that isn't for, you'd have Yechetu.
Contact with
the society. Yeah, contact with that society. That's the trouble in these exercises. You don't have a lot of contact to go by. So I think the standard rule, standard operating procedure is just to do second person action and singular unless otherwise specified. That is basically what you're doing.
It's still a command, though. Mm-hmm. But it can be
in any
person.
Well, yeah, the imperative form is only second person forms. We will see, though, an interesting function of what's called justice and cohortative in the next chapter, in which you could have a third-person form or a first-person form. And it's almost like a command, but it's not quite. What comes out is cohortative means you're kind of exhorting yourself, in effect. And you could be saying, let me go to do this, or oh, that I should do this, you see, something like that. and they'll use something similar in structure to this imperative form. And then there'll be adjusted form, which is kind of a third-person imperative, where you're not making a direct command, but you may be making an indirect command or expressing a wish. Sometimes it's not so strong as a command, but it's a wish. For example, they say, you know, let him do this, or oh, that he would, you know, oh, that my people would serve me, or something. You see, there's not a command, direct command, and it's not addressing the people directly, but it's talking about them. And you can use this cohortative idea, adjusted for the third person, cohortative for the first person. So that'll come up in the next chapter. Those forms are basically the same as perfect, but you do get some forms that have a comma say ending, a different kind of comma say than all the other ones you've had. Just to add to the whole picture. You seem to have a preponderance for those comma say's at the end for almost any kind of purpose. Okay, well, we'll continue this tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll go ahead and start review. I'll just put my marker here. We'll pick this up later on when we get a chance. Yes, you can. The imperfect, it could be, you will not kill those men. You can see even there, you know, like the mother says to the child, you will not do this. It's just almost the same as a command. So that's kind of what happens. It really won't throw you very far off to translate it as a regular imperfect, you know, as long as that negation is there. It's slightly different, you know, context would have to decide because a person could be making a prediction, too. No, you won't do this. And not really making a command, just telling them what they are not going to do, but context is going to have to decide it. Yes.
Well,
you find out when you get through a class like this, if you survive, most of you are doing very well. You find out that you know, your brain can still take in some information. You haven't saturated it yet.
It really makes you wonder what is the limit to the human brain.
There's a lot of pain involved.
You are pretty close, I'm sure.
You don't know what's being pushed out while you're learning.
Yeah, that's one thing you have to.
Well, that's what we were saying about in a Greek class this morning. I need an earplug so that when I walk out, it all doesn't drain out.
Yeah.
That's so bad.